A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 120. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about The First Men in the Moon. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Just before the moon landing in 1969, an old man is telling the story of an even earlier unknown expedition to the moon, of the very first men who were on the moon.
That's right, and this is the basis of this 2010 BBC adaptation of H.G. Wells' novel from 1901. So it's probably the most recent programme we've covered on British Invaders. And this particular adaptation was written for the small screen by Mark Gatiss, and he also stars in it as well. We'll talk a bit more about Mark Gatiss in a while.
Yes, that's right. And this was a BBC Four production that ran 90 minutes, included something of a mix of comedy and drama, although essentially it was an adaptation of the H.G. Wells science fiction with this framing device of the actual moon landings added to it.
Yep, and it's good stuff for us to talk about here. So we'll start with the setup, which you've already sort of given us the intro to, Brian. It's 1969. The world is preparing for the first moon landing, or what it believes to be the first moon landing. And we see a sort of British village fete going on, and a young boy who sort of drifts away from his parents wanders into a tent where an old man is showing a film show, showing reels of old film and telling a rather fantastic story of an earlier voyage to the moon.
And this, of course, is when we switch to flashback and we are looking at 1909. And Julius Bedford, who is escaping a business failure, and he had decided to go out to a small cottage in the country, and he was going to write a play and, you know, hopefully be able to sell this play and so on.
So there he is in his small cottage trying to set himself to write something, but constantly being distracted, and in particular distracted by a strange character who keeps walking past the front of his house, humming tunelessly to himself. And this is his first encounter, and in fact our first encounter, with Professor Cavour and the remarkable gravity-defying invention that he has come up with. A rather fun character, which we'll get to in a moment.
Yes, absolutely. So we have these key characters. Julius Bedford, as we mentioned, played by Rory Kinnear. He has fallen on hard times, and once he meets Cavour, he is hoping to make some money from this discovery and make a new business that is founded on the things that are developed there.
And then we have, as we said, Professor Cavour himself, played by Mark Gatiss, and he is the very sort of definition of an Edwardian English gentleman scientist. A very eccentric character, wearing his old-fashioned cricket cap and his knickerbockers, and in this version with Mark Gatiss sporting a rather fine handlebar moustache, sort of rounding out this rather colourful character for us. And I think Mark Gatiss has great fun with it. And he's a fun character, Brian.
Absolutely, a very fun character, for sure. And in the 1969 sort of framing sequences, we also have Jim, played by Alex Riddle. And he's the young boy who the older Julius Bedford is explaining this story to.
Yes, that's right. We just see him really in the sort of flash-forward sequences in 69, but most of the story is told in this flashback, supposedly through the film that Bedford is showing to the young boy.
That's right. And of course, a key part of what is happening in this is Cavour's invention. And his main invention, his discovery, was something called Cavorite. And Cavorite is this substance that is opaque to gravity. So anything that is painted with it or hidden behind it will not be affected by gravity from the other side. And of course, he's unsure what to do with this exactly. It allows him to make things float in the air because they're not affected by gravity. It can cause some turbulence in the air and so on and so forth. And he doesn't know quite what to do with it, and then comes up with this idea of using it to build a spacecraft and go to the moon with it.
That's it, yes. A voyage of discovery, which he sees in sort of classic scientist mode as a scientific adventure and a chance to discover more about the Earth and the moon and space. But Julius Bedford, of course, as a sort of chap who's fallen rather on hard times, he sees it as an opportunity to make a profit. And in particular, I think he's in sort of entranced by the idea of finding precious minerals and substances on the moon, which they can bring back for profit. So a slight sort of difference of opinion as to why they're going there, but certainly that's what they're planning to do.
Yes, and you get these ideas of using it as almost a tourism type thing, and it becomes something that Bedford is very keen to capitalize on. So they build this capsule that is roughly spherical, or a sort of multi-sided capsule that has these rolled up retractable blinds on it that are coated on one side with Cavorite. So what it allows them to do is open and close these blinds and choose what they will be attracted to and what they won't be attracted to by gravity. So they can close the blinds and then float up into the air and out of the atmosphere and strategically open and close blinds to move towards the moon, the Earth, the sun, whatever they want to move towards.
That's it. And they're off on their voyage, heading for the moon.
Radiant energy, that's what all this was about. Light waves and radio waves and so forth. All these things radiate out and act on bodies at a distance. You follow?
Yes.
Now, all substances are opaque to some form or other of radiant energy.
Opaque?
Yes. Glass, for example. Transparent to light, much less so to heat, so that it's useful as a fire screen. You see?
Yes, I see. But where is all this leading?
Patience. Now, all known substances are transparent to gravity, are they not?
Gravity, obviously.
You can use screens of various kinds to cut off light or heat. You can shield things from Marconi's radio waves using sheets of metal. But nothing will cut off the gravitational attraction of the sun or of the Earth.
Of course not.
Nothing until now. Come along.
So, turning to our production notes about this show, we should start with a quick brief mention of one of the legends of science fiction, H.G. Wells, famous British writer who lived from 1866 to 1946. And he wrote a number of novels in the science fiction genre, although it probably wasn't called that then, Brian.
No, the term science fiction was actually coined quite a number of years later. But when it was really based on the things that H.G. Wells had done. He had written things like The Time Machine, The Invisible Man, The Island of Dr. Moreau, and War of the Worlds, which between them gave you the influences for most of the subgenres of science fiction that we see now, which was quite interesting.
Yes, it's interesting to think how much of what we look at and read now, we can reflect back to those sort of key novels, can't you?
Yes, absolutely. And people look back now and say that H.G. Wells and Jules Verne and Hugo Gernsback were the fathers of science fiction. And H.G. Wells, I think, was definitely a huge part of that.
We touched on one of his novels in British Invaders, episodes 73 and 74, when we talked about a very loose adaptation of The Invisible Man. And now we're talking about The First Men in the Moon, his novel from 1901.
Yes, absolutely. And most of these novels were written in the 1890s or very early 1900s, and not so much later in life, because he lived, you know, almost 40 years beyond when most of his well-known novels were written. One thing he also worked on, which was quite interesting, was the film The Shape of Things to Come, which was based on his novel, but he actually worked very closely on the film as well.
Oh, that's right. Yes, he wrote the screenplay for it, didn't he?
Yes, and I believe worked quite closely with the production as well.
Okay, so that's one adaptation of his work, and that brings us to this adaptation of his novel, The First Men in the Moon. And it brings us to a character, an actor and writer we've talked about before on British Invaders, Mark Gatiss, a comedian and writer and actor who rose to fame as part of the League of Gentlemen and the comedy show of the same name, a very sort of dark comedy show that was very successful. And Mark Gatiss is a very well-known genre fan. He's quite outspoken in his love of Doctor Who and other sort of genre classics. In fact, he's written for and appeared in the new Doctor Who. So he's quite the geek made good, really, isn't he, Brian? He's one of us who's made it.
Yes, absolutely. He also wrote for the big Finnish Doctor Who audio productions and appeared in those as well. And he was involved with the 2005 remake of the Quatermass Experiment and appeared in that. He also recently presented a History of Horror Films documentary that I understand was quite well received.
Yes, absolutely. It was quite popular over here, and it's been shown again a few times.
And Gatiss, of course, is a fan of H.G. Wells and a fan of the 1964 film adaptation of The First Man in the Moon.
That's right. He was a big fan of that, and he looked at getting the rights for this particular novel and realizing that although most of Wells's science fiction novels, the rights all belong to film companies, this one, the rights were available. So he sort of snapped up the opportunity, and he worked with a director that he's quite familiar with, a chap called Damon Thomas, and they'd previously worked on a television adaptation of a book called The Worst Journey in the World by Aspley Cherry Guys. And they'd also done a sort of Christmas ghost story, or rather three ghost stories linked together in a show called Crooked House, which may come up again in the future here on British Invaders. That's quite a fun ghost story. So him and Damon Thomas used to work in together.
And they took this to Pinewood Studios for filming, and they recreated the surface of the moon, which of course is a major element of this, using sand and cement. And they built this capsule, the Cavorite-lined capsule, with a sort of deliberate steampunk sort of look, as, of course, the novel was from 1901, so it was based on some of these 19th-century kinds of things, so it was natural to use that sort of look.
Yes, and quite a good look they achieved as well. The capsule is very impressive. And the moon sort of sequences are also very good, although I gather quite unpleasant to film because of the amount of sand and cement dust in the air whenever they moved about. But it gave a very good result in the look of the programme. And of course, as we've said, we've just got basically the two actors. We've just got Gatiss and Rory Kinnear as the main characters, and hardly anybody else in this production. But there are sneaked in cameos by the other two members of the League of Gentlemen actors, which is Rhys Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton, who are there if you can spot them. It's quite quick, but there's a quick cameo by both of them. And then we've got the special effects designed by a company called Rushes, who give us the space travel sequences and also the creatures that they encounter on the moon, the inhabitants of the moon. Which we'll get to perhaps in our next episode.
Yes, of course, you have to have something there, don't you? And this was broadcast on BBC4 in October of 2010.
That's right, went down quite well, and has been repeated since on the BBC, but as I say, this is a very recent show for us to look at.
Gravity, you see? The force that pulls everything, including you and me, down to the ground. Without gravity, we would be weightless, and over Cavorite, air itself is weightless.
Is it so?
Well, the stuff is completely inert, as long as it's kept at the right temperature. Once it's cooled...
Yes?
All the air about the apple will cease to have any weight. There were one or two alarming moments in the manufacturing process, I can tell you.
Oh?
Yes. I made a thin sheet of Cavorite, you see, and all the air above it had nothing to put it to earth.
So I think that just about wraps things up for the first half of our discussion on this one. In our next episode, we will talk about what our travelers find on the moon and what they do once they get there.
We're also going to talk a little bit more about H.G. Wells' novel and in particular look at some other adaptations. Plus, of course, we've got to get to our reviews, talk about availability and get to our recommendations about this show.
Absolutely. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much, and do join us next time. Until then, this is Eamon in England saying goodbye.